But for today, a successful being enjoyed paying the price success extracted from him. A successful being enjoyed paying the price success extracted from him. A successful being enjoyed paying the price success extracted from him. A successful being is successful in all areas, not just in the area of money, in the area of job success, in the area of happiness, in the area of feeling that he has made a contribution to the world. But a successful being is successful in many areas. Now, if a person wants to be a success, and in their business they want somebody else's job, they want to move up the ladder, and so they speak unkindly about the other person, rumor him, so that he loses his place in the company, and then this person can walk up there and take it. And then walk up and take it, and walk up and take it. There's always the possibility that someone may do the same thing to him, and he may find himself on the bottom of the heap, very ignominiously, without glory. We always pay for anything we have in life. We pay the price of happiness to be happy. We pay the price of joy to have joy in our life. We pay the price of peace to have peace in our life. We must first be peace. We must first be joy. We must first be success. Because if we're not success, we're not going to have success. What does a successful person do? A successful person feels liking for himself. He feels joy in his heart. He feels a wonderment about everything he does. A successful person pays a great price for being successful. A successful person pays every moment a joyful thing. No matter what comes up in his life, he finds his attitude current in that thing. If somebody comes up and says, "Oh, there's a problem over on the other street." And he says, "What's that to me? I live over here. I'm untouched by that." Then he is going to have this feeling that the rest of the world doesn't give a hoot and holler in hell about him, because he doesn't care about them. Now, if someone came to him and said, "There's a problem over on the other street," he would say, "There now is peace on earth, and it began with me. I see the neighbors at peace. I see everything in balance." He puts the cause in motion of who he is for everything that comes to light in his world. Now, if his boss is having a problem, and that problem is very, very serious, that problem is how to raise the company level of income, how to maintain enough product sales and marketing to keep the company afloat, and how to do these things, and you, an underling, you have all the ideas that could save the company. And so, instead of telling the boss all your ideas, you hold him and you say, "I'll use this when I'm president. I'll use this when I'm in charge of the company. And I'll be in charge soon, because the boss is going to lose this whole thing, and I'm going to be the one to take over because I'm second in command." What's going to happen? That person will not have an opportunity to express the genius he has within him, because he held it back. He closed the book of his life so that no one could see those wonderful ideas that he had. And then, when the boss caves in, when the company caves in, he was second in command, and so he is thought just as poorly as the boss for this lack of success in the company. Now, if this man were to share his ideas with the boss, say, "Hey, boss, here's some thoughts that might be helpful to make better marketing, to get better sales, to put the company back on its feet. And here's some more ideas. Oh, here's some more ideas. And the boss says, oh, I thank you so much. And the boss goes out and said, my idea is to do this. My idea is to do this. My idea is to... Never saying one word about the fact that you gave him those ideas. But you. You just sit back and you say, hey, go for it. Go for it. Here's some more ideas, boss. Here's some more ideas. When you give in love, in joy of your heart, you're making a payment on your own success program. And the day will come when you're in a position to use your ideas. And you have primed the pump of your own intuitiveness, your own genius. And though you gave away your ideas and never got credit for them, you didn't feel bad. You just knew that that was your idea. Yeah. The idea that saved the company, that was my idea. But that's fine. That's fine. The company is saved. I got a job. And then the day comes and the boss says, hey, I'm in trouble again. Can you help me? And instead of saying, I helped you last time, but you didn't give me any credit. You don't say that. You say, sure. Sure, I primed my pump. And here are some more great ideas. And because of your great humility, your ability to give without needing credit, your ability to share without needing to be told that it was your idea to tell the world about it, more comes to you. More ideas. More ideas. You got a good living, you got a good job. And the day will come when not only will you get credit, but you'll have the opportunity to show what greatness lies within you. The price that you pay for success is humility. Giving, giving, giving. And it comes back in strange, beautiful ways. The price you pay for success is love. Love, unconditional. Hey, he didn't give me credit for this. I don't care. You tell your wife, oh yes, I gave the boss these great ideas, and he used these great ideas, and it saved the company. And then your wife says, why don't you get the credit for it? No. You don't create a bitchy wife. You don't create a wife in your world who says you should do things that you don't choose to do. You create a wife that's harmonious with you, that's a genius too. That's fabulous. And you create children that are fabulous. This is the price you pay for success by living every minute the conviction of your life being an open book. Everything is revealed. Everything is known to everybody who you are. They don't know how great you are because you haven't turned all your pages yet. But you are great. They don't know how great you are because you haven't continually primed that pump, and that pump is just flowing. There's more coming up, welling out of you. All the marvelous ideas, all the genius ideas, all the successful ideas. You've just begun. You've just begun. My son Mark oftentimes had people take his ideas and run with them, not giving him credit, which didn't matter. Stealing the idea, in fact. But he always said, hey, that's okay. Then I get to see how that idea is working. I wasn't going to develop that idea right now anyhow. And when I see how they work that idea, then I can take my next idea, my improvements, and put it on that idea that they've already developed for me. How wonderful. You see, he's not afraid that his pump is going to, well, his well is going to run dry and that his pump will not be able to draw it out. He's not worried about that. The price of his success, oh, he may not be the richest person on earth, but he's certainly one of the happiest. And he went through many affairs in which women were in his life, and wonderful women. And he could have said, will I never find the perfect woman? No, every woman he had, he said, was perfect. And then along came Miss Wonderful. And he was ready for her because he had the humility to know that they teamed up and made a wonderful couple. And she loves his work. And he loves his work. And he loves her. They act like two young lovers whenever they're together. Because the success of his relationship with women happened in a very short time, you might say. After he was 25. Before that, his mind was so filled with his ideas and his dreams and his goals, he didn't have time for anything else except his mind and his dreams. You see, success comes to us because we live who we are. And you can be a flash in the pan success too. You know what a flash in the pan success means? It means it was just for a moment. Just for a moment, you can have a brilliant idea that pops up. Oh, hey, great, you know. And you use that idea, and it's wonderful. But it's only the chain. It's only the beginning of that wonderful chain of wonderful events. And if you're not in the process of keeping that well primed so that you can keep pumping it out, then the chain ceases. You just get one little link. And that little link is wonderful. Einstein with his theory of relativity. It's a wonderful little link in his chain. But it doesn't mean anything. It only means something in the big picture in which it is expounded. And in that link in his chain, he told about how the universe is not level, but the universe is round. He told how the pattern of the universe is formed and how its undulating vibratory experiences are so fantastic. All from the beginning of the theory of relativity. And he went on. And he expressed many, many more points. And then the wonderful thing happened. The world says, you're wrong. And they tried to prove him wrong. He didn't care. He was on to other adventures. He said, if they can prove me wrong, that's great. Because if they prove me wrong, then they prove something else right. But they didn't prove him wrong. His wisdom, his dream, his success came from that inner well, which he kept primed. He was constantly drawing up ideas, constantly doing it. Our friend Hawking's, remember him? He lives in a body that's not very comfortable for him. He has to use devices to make his voice be heard. And he has to use devices to do his writing for him because his body just doesn't function anymore. He's a brain in a useless body. How wonderful if his brain could be transported to a useful body. But maybe the body is more useful than we know. Because it keeps him from doing anything but thinking. He is priming that well continually. And out of him comes books, books, books. Genius, genius, genius. Ideas that transcend anything that mankind has thought about today. And not only the ideas, supportive evidence of those ideas. Not only theories, but created facts. Now, what price is he paying for his success? He was never one to use his body anyhow. He was never one to go out and run and play, which he'd love to do, I'm sure, because that's what's expected of our body. But he has found the well of greatness deep within him, in the very heart of his being. And he's telling the world about this. He's revealing himself the very inner depth of himself to the world. Oh, he's got to use all sorts of ingenious ideas, ingenious inventions to express himself because he has no voice. He has to use ingenious ideas to reveal what's going on inside of him because he has no fingers to work on a pencil or typewriter. But he has invented gadgets that allow him to let this wonder come forth from him. You think you got a problem? You think you got a problem? You haven't even begun to prime your well, to be the fabulous being that is within you. It's not me that's going to be what you are. It's you that's going to be what you are. You're going to look within yourself and you're going to say, wow, wow. And you see, Mr. Hawking didn't say the things that are in his heart. He revealed the complete picture. You see, he didn't have the ability to tell people and let them discourage him. He had to think the entire idea from start to finish in his mind and then tell it, because it was quite laborious to tell these things. So he doesn't tell a bunch of theorems, a bunch of theories. He tells what he has thought through from beginning to end. And so, should you ever have the interest, and I assure you it takes a lot of interest to read his writing, should you ever have the interest to read such intellectual magnificence, such astute awareness of the universe and how it's formed and how it functions, and you pick up one of Hawking's books, you will be profoundly awakened. But it takes a great interest to do it in the first place. Let me ask you this question, beloved. How many of you have read anything of Einstein? Probably none. And here is a great mind that is very lucid, a great mind that puts down his ideas wonderfully, a great mind about whom many other authors have written very, very legibly, very understandably. But do you know Carl Sagan? Mm-hmm. Carl Sagan's an amazing man too. He since has moved along, but brilliant mind. And he was an educator. And he would teach his classes all about the universe. But he would teach them in such a charming way that they were just illumined, that they were just inspired, that as they listened to him, they said, wow, wow, wow. And so he prepared a number of television shows telling about the universe. In fact, there's a whole series of them, beautifully done. And this little school teacher, this little college professor, blah, you know, earning not much, sold this to a PBS. And he became an instant millionaire, multimillionaire, billionaire. And he went around lecturing all over the world. He was not acclaimed. They thought he was simplistic, that what he was saying was too easy, that what he was saying did not have enough foundation behind it, but it had foundation. Everything he wrote or said came from a very astute background. He was a very sincere student. All of the things that you read about him, if you read about him, we have some of his books here. All the things that you read stand up in the scientific community. And he, like Edison, he, like Einstein, was told that his theorems and theories were incorrect. But the people who tried to prove them incorrect were unable to do so because they only had the same things to work on that he had. And they had to unwillingly agree with him. But you see, this is what happens in the scientific community as well as others. Great men listen within and speak it outwardly. As Einstein said, I woke up in the middle of the night and I had the answer from within me. Great men write great things and they are put down. They are told that what they write is incorrect. They're told that their approach to life is incorrect. Well, people can't do that to Hawking's, because Hawking's has so profoundly listened within and so precisely said what he heard and what he knows that it cannot be contested. It is contested, but they cannot find a problem. Well, with Einstein, because he's still very much alive, Hawking's is dead, but he's alive. Hawking's lives, but no one can reach him. Einstein lived, but everyone could reach him, and so they protested him. Many other great people, Carl Sagan, he lived, and so because he was so successful, his scientific community was jealous of him, and they felt, why can't they do that? They're just as smart. Well, they didn't have that touch of eloquence, that touch of genius, that touch of magic that Carl Sagan had. He didn't know he had it. His students did. His students listened to him in the class and, wonderful. I understand it clearly. Like my professor in history at Marquette University. He would tell us all, put your books away, put your pencils and pad of paper away, and now let's go. And he would take us on a journey in history on one segment that all of the characters jumped right into our face alive. He was a magic man. He filled his theater at the University of Marquette University. He filled it every single day because word got around that he was excellent. And he was. But you don't hear about him because he was magic in his own right, in his own way, and he was happy. He didn't feel he had to go beyond the walls of Marquette University. He didn't have to go beyond the walls of this great amphitheater that he spoke in. It was probably not as big as I remember it, but it was pretty big. It was pretty big. Held about 300-400 students. He lived it. He was a success. But he wore crumply clothes, university professor type clothing, you know, not caring about the outer appearances, just listening to that inner voice. And as he spoke, we all entered with him into his world of magic, into his world of history. Many types of television shows tried to take us back into history. And they show us the costumes, and they show us the people, and they show us the history that is in the books. But the television shows don't go back into the way and why people thought that way. Why did a person think about washing themselves? Why did a person think about using clean water? Why did a person think about using the river to have it as a toilet and using it as a source of water? Well, what happened about these things? And you see, he went into those areas. He gave us understanding of why these people had problems and how they solved them. Why these people had things that were burdensome to them and how they overcame them so that today's society doesn't have that. And you know, as I recall, now and thinking about what he said, not having thought of it at the time. But what he said was, the people who had those limiting conditions in which to live said to themselves, I am whole and perfect. They said to themselves, that is no concern to me. I can drink this and be untouched. I can eat this and be untouched. I can live in this environment of the peat bog or wherever it may be and be untouched. And they were. They were. Their bodies were transmuted, transformed. Their bodies were able to tolerate through mutation the conditions in which they lived. And they did. And in this presentation, he didn't say, now see, that's why you have this, that's why. He just let you think that's why you have it yourself. He just told the story of then and let us interpolate it into the experience of now. He just gave us magic and music of his field, and we opened our heart and made it today. You can do that. You can live so wonderful, so beautiful, if you'll open your book and let the magic flow out of it. You don't have to read it. It's there. You already know it. And let it flow out like the pump that is well primed. And out it comes. Out comes these marvelous ideas. The ideas that save the company from ruin. The ideas that give a company an opportunity to grow and be fantastic. The price we pay for success is being ourselves. Being ourselves unconditionally loving. Never fearing that we must lock our door for someone's going to steal what we have. What do you have? What do you have behind your locked door? The only priceless gem that you have in your life is yourself. The most priceless thing that exists in this universe is you. And you give yourself away. And that's wonderful. Because whatever you give, more is going to be there. Share with the world how beautiful it is, how you see it. Tell yourself how beautiful you are and how you see yourself. And as you do this, more will come. You're priming the pump. More will come. The well will flow forth. Because the well does not want to do anything but go. And today, I give you this blessing. I see each one of you today an artesian well. Do you know what an artesian well is? An artesian well is a well which sends water to the surface continuously without any pump, without any motivating force, except it's under pressure under the ground. And it's under pressure for years and years and years. We had an artesian well behind my office in Prairie du Chien. And it flowed, and we stopped to look at it as we went by just recently. And it's not quite as strong as it was. But in the days that I was there, and the hundreds of years that were before, the water came out in a fountain that was at least 8 inches in width. It whoosh, up in the air, making a great spray, and all the community would come there and get water. They had wells, they had other sources, but this artesian well was glorious, wonderful, never-ending. And that's what I honor you with today. I see you, a never-ending artesian well. And that's the price that success extracts from you. Don't worry what you're doing with your water. Just let it flow. Don't worry what's going to become of your wonderful ideas. Let them go. Give, and you will have more to give. Because you're wonderful. I love you very much.